Hey, it's Shane from GotRom.com, and welcome to the GotRom podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to interview some of the world's leading experts in fixing injuries, getting flexible, and making you move and feel better. And the first person that I'm talking to in episode number one is Matt Hsu from Upright Health. Now, Matt Hsu is one of the most innovative thinkers and teachers in the industry, in my humble opinion. And he has over 21,000 online students and over 300,000 YouTube subscribers. So the man's got some interesting things to say. And in this interview, he's gonna teach you how to think right, how to move right, and how to feel right. So without further ado, I bring you Matt Hsu. Matt Hsu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Shane. It's good to see you. Good to see that you're alive.
For those that don't know, I'm in Colombia. Matt's on the other side of the world, practically in California. I think you're still in California, right?
I'm still in California, yes.
Nice. Well, thanks to technology, we can connect. And one of the first things, I imagine that a lot of my audience already knows you because we're partners in the FAI Fix program. And so we have kind of a large overlapping audience. But for those that don't know who are you?
So my name is Matt Hsu. I am the founder of Upright Health. I help people with chronic pain, joint pain, weakness, and I help people understand why pain starts, why your modern life of tapping away on your keyboard for 18 hours a day doesn't lead to a healthy, strong, and active body. And I really try to impress upon people the importance of taking the responsibility of fixing yourself and avoiding a lot of the traps that are out there that can get you into more and more pain. And I personally have had tons of issues with my body. It all started very early on in my life and lasted through what would normally be called the prime of one's life. So that's what really drives me, because I've been able to come out of that and I've seen that it's possible, and I want other people to be able to achieve the same thing.
That's perfect. That leads me to kind of my second question. I've noticed this in many areas of life, that some of the best teachers have personally lived through some bad stuff, and now they found a way out of it, and now they teach about it. So, you know, certain psychologists that may have had a lot of mental problems found ways of dealing with that and solving it, and then now they help people with mental problems. You've had a lot of physical problems, as you said, in your prime, when most of us don't want to have physical problems, in your 20s and stuff like that, where you should just be out there enjoying life. But tell us a little bit more, some specific details about what you were dealing with in your 20s and how you came out of that.
So in my 20s, I was already well on my descent. So I had high school even, I had a couple injuries. I had my back get really wacky from a wave hitting my low back when I wasn't paying attention. And I had back pain for about a year, year and a half that ibuprofen and other painkillers just didn't touch. It was just always there. Then I pulled my groin badly. And then in college, with all my compensations, still playing hockey, still snowboarding, I managed to pop a shoulder. And then every time I saw a doctor for any of these issues, they would tell me the solution for you is to rest. And so I would rest, but the problem would never get better. The hamstring would stay a little weird. The shoulder stayed a little weird. I would just rest and type on my computer, writing my papers in school, and then my hands and wrists started to go. Then by my early 20s, I had already been resting for about 3 years, and I was on an exchange program in Germany, and I noticed that I could no longer run, like I couldn't jog at all. Walking down a step, if I was loading my left leg, hurt the knee. Like, just there was constant pinching going on in the knee. And I remember going to the doctor to get an MRI, because it was absurdly cheap to do in Germany. And the doctor looked at the MRI and he said, it looks okay. Right? Like, there's no arthritis, there's no tears. So you're probably just using it too much and you just need to rest more. And I was like, I cannot rest more. I've already been resting. So obviously this prescription doesn't make sense. I'm finished asking Western doctors for advice on this, because I don't need to pay anybody to tell me to just rest, and I already know the outcome. But I still didn't know how to fix it. So at that point, it's like hands, wrists, shoulder, left shoulder sometimes. I had some problems with headaches and stuff. My hips were hurting just to sit. My feet were hurting. Like walking a couple blocks was tough because my feet hurt so bad. I got thicker shoes. My knees were hurting. I couldn't run. I couldn't hang from monkey bars, I realized one day. Like, my body was just a wreck. And I would wake up every day feeling like crap. I just thought, I can't do this until I'm 60. Like, there's just no way I can't survive this. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously, we've known each other for a long time, so you know that I can relate, because a similar thing was happening to me in my 20s. Like, all of the bad stuff that can happen to your body was happening to me. And I think you and I met right at about the time where we were both sort of coming out of the woods, sort of like we'd been dealing with all that stuff, noticing that the traditional therapies that we were getting weren't helping that much, and trying to find solutions on our own. And that was when we started creating programs to help people learn what we had learned. I'd like for you to talk just a little bit about what maybe the both of us are most well known for, which is FAI, hip impingement, femoral acetabular impingement, and your specific sort of hip issues that you've had, the traditional things that you tried, and then what actually helped you with your hip issues.
Oh man, just sitting would just make my hips hurt. I discovered in my mid-20s that I lost a lot of hip mobility that I had had as a hockey goalie, especially in high school. My hips were pretty good, like better than certainly most men's hip mobility. It was pretty good. I was able to almost do the splits and touch my toes. That was not a problem. But I remember distinctly in my mid-20s, I was in my bedroom in a cold apartment in San Francisco, and I was bending over just to kind of remind myself of like, what was I capable of before? And I went to touch my toes and I was like, what the hell just happened? Like, why are my fingers nowhere near my toes? Like, this is crazy. And it was just so eye-opening to see how much my body had deteriorated. There were times where just lying on my side, I mean, it was actually not just times, it was like a very regular thing where lying on my side in bed, I just felt like my hip, it wasn't sharp pain, but it was just this gnawing, awful pain that would just like just make me want to leave my body, right? It's like some people call it like a toothache or something, but it's just like, it's just there. I can tell something's not right and nothing would make that go away. And like ability to sit in the tailor pose, like to cross my foot across my thigh. I know you had trouble with that too, right? It was just like so many things were lost. Everything felt bad. Even biking felt like my pelvis didn't have enough padding under it. So I couldn't play hockey. Like none of the things I enjoyed were attainable anymore. I tried massage work. Some of that did help. So I saw a Rolfer, even went through the whole training at the Rolf Institute and just got a lot of body work done. I tried acupuncture, chiropractic from various chiropractors, and none of it ever really lasted longer than, most often it would only be for a few hours. And then in the best case scenario, like some of the deeper tissue work, I would feel last for maybe, you know, days to maybe 2 weeks, but then things would revert to the awful mean, which was just discomfort and disability. So all those things were helpful in the sense that they would give me glimpses of here's what your body can do if. And then it was clear that what I was doing wasn't enough, right? Like I had to do something else. So that if was like, if you do something else, you might be able to hold on to this ability. Especially with the deep tissue work, it was doing something with the muscle and the muscle responded. But then if I go sit down again, all of a sudden everything collapses. So then I started looking at exercise. I met a guy who was a practitioner of the Ogoski method, and he took me through some posture exercises. And for anyone who's not familiar, those are generally like pretty easy, low-level exercises, but they can make a difference depending on where you're at. And for me, where I was at, they made a difference. Pretty noticeable difference to how I was using and holding my body. And that just clicked, you know, it just showed me like, oh my God, like I'm so, so weak. I can't even like put my arms out to the side and draw circles, which is something I used to do as a kid in martial arts. You know, you'd do that for like 2 minutes, but I can't do it for 15 seconds. I was like, this is insane. So once I saw that, I just started looking at basically what's out there in the exercise world and how can I apply that to my body to make it function better. And I just started exploring powerlifting, looking at Olympic lifting. I've just played with stuff, bodybuilding, and just think about what are the angles involved here? What muscles would that work? And how does that counteract the computer and smartphone slouches and hunches that we're all in all the time? So by regularly experimenting with exercises and then keeping ones and adding them into my life, replacing ones that aren't as good for me, I found hey, I'm able to do a lot now. And so when I met you, I had gotten to the point where I was able to actually play hockey again. And that was kind of amazing, kind of mind-blowing. That I went from not being able to walk downstairs to being able to play ice hockey. And I was doing very well, So, and now I've given up hockey because I no longer like the aggravation. And I now live very far from an ice rink. But now I surf. And that requires my body to work and to do things that a lot of other people's bodies can't do. But I think what I want to emphasize there is the reason my body is able to do the things that maybe other people can't currently do is only because I've been putting in a lot of work up to this point to be able to go into a deep crouch, to be able to get my arms up and overhead and thrashing around, and where a lot of people are just still living inside a little box.
Yeah. So it sounds like you went from everything's working okay as a teenager, and then everything's going to hell in your 20s, and literally almost every part of your body is hurting and you just want to crawl out of your skin practically.
Yep.
To doing an obsessive, crazy amount of experimentation in a good kind of way, just exploring everything, powerlifting, bodybuilding, gymnastics, capoeira. I know you've explored all right. kinds of things. You're a mad scientist like I am. Right. What would you say are sort of the distilled principles that you learned from all of that? You've alluded to some of them. You said massage helps a little bit. Strength training has helped me a little bit. What are the distilled principles that you think that helped you and that you think everyone should also explore?
Okay, so that's a great question. And I've been trying to distill those down a lot in the last year. I've really been diving into that. So most important thing is ATM. So it's always think muscles. So I wrote an article about this too, that's on my website. Maybe we can provide links or something to some of these articles. But ATM, always think muscles, is so key because it's so easy to get abjectly discouraged by what you hear from doctors and other health professionals. People will tell you, you have this thing, whether it's bone shapes, whether it's arthritis, whether it's something that's torn, whatever it is, something that's inflamed. The orthopedic model is basically, you are screwed. All you can do is just let somebody fix it for you because you are just permanently damaged. Unless you have somebody inject you or saw into you, cut into you, and fix something for you. At no point does modern Western medicine look at the conditions that lead up to your movement issues. They completely ignore your muscles. Almost without exception. I mean, the most common time I see orthopedics really concerned about muscles is when they're going to sever those muscles, right? It's I've been shocked to see, sometimes they will literally sever your tensor fascia lata to get rid of your TFL pain. They'll just cut the muscle, right? Or they'll do that to your pec minor. And it's you can't do that. So you have to remember that there's a whole body of medical tradition that's based on this idea of if it's hurting, it's busted, and that's the only reason it would hurt, so let's cut it or let's numb it or whatever. But that's like saying when you're hungry, instead of feeding yourself nutritious food, you should remove your stomach. Or, you've been starving out in the jungle in Colombia for 2 weeks. You come out and your body hurts, your stomach hurts, and instead of nursing you back to health, we remove every part of you that hurts. That's crazy. Right?
Yeah. So, the image that comes to my mind is it's sort of like the Lego model. It's like, something's not working. Let's just plug in a new one. That's fine. Yeah. Let's cut out what's bad and plug in something better. Yeah. The body is not quite so, it's not like a machine like that.
No, it's not. And it's funny because people Like, we have this idea that the body is a machine, because in many ways we live in an industrial society where we kind of like love seeing a machine do the same thing over and over again, like precisely, and it's like powerful and all that. And the human body can work like that, but it can also be, if it's treated well, it's more amazing than just a mechanical machine, because it has the ability to adapt to new stimuli, right? So, you know, when we're talking about ATM, it's like, don't get caught up in the medical diagnoses. Think about what's happening with the muscles as a result of what you're training the muscles to do. And for most modern Western humans, it is sitting on your butt with a screen in front of you, your hands in front of you, in a narrow position all day. Your butt is going to get weak, your legs are going to get weak, your back's going to get weak, your abs are going to get weak, your chest, shoulder muscles, even your wrists are all going to get weak. Your triceps are going to get weak. Everything is getting weak. Like, all of it gets weaker. So if you've been subjecting yourself to that kind of training, that kind of physical training, you should expect muscles to communicate with you about the problem. That is how this human machine works. And the mistake people make is thinking, if I go to the doctor and the doctor tells me it's because of this diagnosis, then it is because of this permanent damage that the doctor thinks is the thing. But nobody has bothered to ask me, well, have you done anything to build the strength of your butt muscles? Have you done anything to build the strength of your inner thigh muscles? What about your shoulder muscles? Have you done any of that ever? And, you know, outside of PE class, which most of us were goofing off during anyway, most people stopped, you know, like stopped doing any sort of real exercise by the time they hit high school, right? So, you know, with ATM, I want people to, instead of getting caught up in like, oh, it's permanently damaged, just think about your muscles, think about how you can build that muscle balance back so that your joint can move correctly, right? So ATM is a huge one, huge, huge one. And does that make sense? Did I ramble too
totally
long?
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, what I'm hearing, what you're saying is, don't think drugs, pills, and surgery first. Think muscles and movement, and how can I build a better relationship with my muscles, with my body, how it's feeling, how it's moving. And I'm imagining in practical terms, like, that means you're going to invite people to do some strength training. It doesn't have to be like powerlifting, bodybuilding, but like pushing and pulling and moving against a resistance.
Yeah.
And moving more frequently, not being in that narrow position like you were talking about. So moving more, some strength training. What else is sort of fundamental to a healthy, pain-free life?
So exactly what you said, the way I talk about that is you need to build strength at every length. So that's another key idea. So strength at every length, which you know very well personally and physically, is you want to be able to lengthen muscles, and you want to have strength at not just those lengthened positions, but also at shortened positions. So it's trying to develop a full range of motion and full control through that range of motion. And preferably, and I think actually out of necessity, you'll need to be training with resistance at all those different angles.
We're back again with Matt Chu. We had maybe the most amazing podcast in the history of podcasts. And unfortunately, there was a technological breakdown and we lost the second half of that video. So sorry you can't see that, but we're back again and we're going to finish the interview with Mr. Matt Chu. And where I want to start is, we had left off talking about how everyone should move more, you know, get up from your desk, stop being in front of the phone, move more, and do strength training and build strength at every length. So if we're moving more and we're building strength, are there any other principles that you can share with us for how to live a healthy, happy life physically in your body? What other physical principles can you give us?
One big one that I also wanted to mention is this idea of RPP. It's repeated position practice. And it's helpful to keep this in mind, that whatever positions you practice a lot of, you get good at. So people with bad posture, whether it's hunchback posture, anterior tilt, or movement problems like hip impingement, you have to remember RPP, repeated position practice. If all you practice was this limited range, that's all you're going to be good at. And so if you want to improve on your range of motion, if you want to improve on anything movement wise, posture wise, you will need to have repeated position practice. Another key thing is strength at every length. That's a really key idea for people who are really flexible. Like you, Shane, you and I have talked about this for years and years. It's basically, you know, if you're a really flexible dancer or a gymnast, somebody who can do all kinds of stuff, you still need to have the ability to contract and use your muscles in those positions. You know, if you can do the side splits easily, but you can't actually contract those muscles, your inner thigh muscles at that end range position, you're putting yourself at risk of discomfort at the least, and then pain and actual disability at the worst. This tends to be women. I've met a lot of women over the years who were really flexible from really relaxing and stretching into every yoga pose or dance position, ballet thing, and their hips don't feel good. They got so flexible, but actually so atrophied in their muscles that they could no longer feel capable, confident, and coherent as a cohesive body. And strength at every length is important to keep in mind, because if you just stretch and just try to relax all the time, you're not going to be functional. And on the other side of that, if you're somebody who's really stiff, stiffness and inflexibility is also a result of not having strength at the positions you're currently able to achieve. So like somebody, like a stiff guy who can't touch his toes, that guy has trouble relaxing the hamstrings. And also those hamstring muscles may not want to lengthen any more than where they're currently at, because those hamstring muscles don't have the ability to contract and control that position. If you go any further, your body's like, no, we can't. We're not going to be able to make it out of that. So just being able to contract those muscles, train strength at that length, actually gives you a little more access to the next half inch or quarter inch. So when you're trying to get more flexible, the practice of relaxation is definitely important. And also the practice of building strength at every length is important. So I think those are some of the key things. And then tissue work, you know, we've talked about tissue work actually really early on in my chronic pain journey was very, 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 very important, because it opened my eyes to, wow, like my shoulder can feel better if somebody just massages the right muscles and loosens the right muscles. Tissue work can really help free up something that's really stiff and then give you the ability to move into a new range of motion. Now, these days, I find it's not as important for me. So on my hierarchy of needs, it's much lower unless I actually injure myself. Like if I, you know, if I fall or do something surfing or hurt myself, you know, muscles can seize up. If I overtrain something, muscles can seize up and get really stiff. And in that case, it is really helpful to just do some tissue work, massage work to get something moving. And then for me, I'm finding relaxation work and strength at every length, getting those contractions in my stretches makes the biggest, biggest difference for me. And I guess to wrap all of that up, I would say it's important to experiment and understand that your needs can change over time and based on what you're doing in your current life. So if you're a 19-year-old weightlifter who's just constantly in the gym lifting weights, doing some relaxation stretching, tissue work is probably going to be really important, especially if you've not done any of it forever, right? But if you're on the other side and you're a 45-year-old woman who's been practicing yoga for 15 years and you're super limber and loose and relaxed and chilled out, but your shoulder hurts in almost any position you put it in, and you constantly have knots between your shoulder blades, maybe you want to be thinking about more strength training, building strength at lengthened positions, shortened positions, and it's going to vary, right? Maybe next year you're going to be doing something different that requires different maintenance. So RPP, strength at every length, and always think muscles.
Beautiful. I love that you condense things down into these rememberable sort of catchphrases, these memorable catchphrases. I'm taking notes here, and what I took away from what you just said is that sort of RPP is RPP, repeated position practice. RPP, now you know me. It reminds me of another quote, which is success is what we repeatedly do. Or actually the quote is, we are what we repeatedly do. Success, therefore, is not an act, but a habit. So it's not about getting into a position once or twice. It's about repeatedly practicing these positions over and over again. Right. And then also the strength at every length, not just staying in these confined sort of short bodybuilding ranges, but building strength at all of the ranges. And then using the tissue work, if you're someone who needs the tissue work, if you're at that place in your journey where you need to free things up more. Yeah. And then stretching and experimenting a lot and practicing the art of relaxation. All of those are sort of the boiled down essence of what I was getting from what you're saying. That's awesome. Thank you. I'm curious to switch gears a little bit. You have a young child in your life. You're a relatively new father. And I know that your health, how your body feels, how you move is still extremely important to you. How do you balance being a business owner, a father, a husband, and taking care of your body? Because for a lot of people, that's a big challenge to juggle all those balls. How do you do it? What are your best tips?
I struggle with how to answer this because I've had this conversation with parents who are going through that struggle too. I first want to say I'm grateful for the life situation that I'm currently in where I can control my schedule. I have more freedom and latitude to control my schedule than most parents. So I want to be present to the fact that the way I think about this, I want to try to make it as practical as possible for people who may have like a more strict work schedule. For me, what I've personally done is basically limit what I do. I actually cut back a lot once my son was born on the amount of work I do. And what that involved was actually thinking like, is this actually worth the stress? Do I really want to sacrifice irreplaceable moments with my son or with my wife with this busy work? And do I also want to have the recovery time mentally from this, whatever stressor is? Because all of that is going to take away from the time I have, which is limited with a young child who still likes me, right? So I actually always have in my mind, and my wife and I joke about this all the time, is, you know, my son is, now he's 4, there's a limited window where he actually is going to think I'm cool and want to hang out with me. So I would like to enjoy and prioritize that time while it's here and available. I also think that's been informed by reading stories and little anecdotes and snippets from people who have interviewed people who are on their deathbeds or close to death, and just seeing that very few people on their deathbeds say like, oh man, I wish I had done that extra work project, right? Or I wish I had posted that extra YouTube video or spent an extra, you know, 2 hours that night researching a camera, right? Like nobody says that when they're facing mortality. And I think having a son has made that choice much more clear for me and has made it more clear to me how valuable minutes and hours can be, especially because there is this finite number of them. And that finite number, I unfortunately don't know for myself. So whichever ones I'm in right now, I should try to enjoy and really be present for. On a practical level, you don't want to be constantly thinking about death every day, which I don't know who doesn't. I love it. But if you don't want to be thinking about that all the time, I think one thing that is helpful is as a parent trying to prioritize your own, if not happiness, then sanity. And what I mean by that is I've seen a lot of parents, and myself included, we can get caught up in what we think is the thing we're supposed to have our kids do in order to be seen as a good parent. It could be like, oh, they have to wash their hands, for example, like right after they come home, or like right before they touch any item of food, they've got to wash their hands, right? I bring this up because I was with a friend, hopefully she never hears this, but it was really funny. We were with our kids and we had just been out playing at a playground, and then she and I came back with her son, my son. We went to their backyard and we got home, and then the kids were playing in the dirt in the backyard. And then my friend was like, hey, you know, to her son, like, we need to wash our hands. And the kid didn't want to do it. Like, the kid's just ignoring her. Like, no, he doesn't want to wash his hands. He's playing with dirt, right? And I was like, why do they need to wash their hands? And she's like, well, you know, they were just playing at the park. And I was like, but they're playing in the dirt. And she's like, yeah, I mean, I think the dirt in our backyard is maybe cleaner, you know? So, and, you know, it's like, there's this tension forming over, you know, a fight going to brew over this thing that doesn't ultimately matter, right? Like, you're playing in dirt, like, let's just let it go, right? And I think it's very easy for us as parents to, like, get caught in these traps of, like, my kid should do this, or this is the pattern we're supposed to do. And then we get into these power struggles over things that ultimately may not matter. And I guess that's a practice of discernment, I guess, of just really judging whether or not what you're getting heated about is worth your own stress and your own loss of sanity. I think of it like, too, like if I want my son to, like, put on shoes or socks or whatever because of the weather or whatever, and early on it'd be like, oh, you need to put on your jacket or whatever. But, you know, eventually I realized, like, hey, if he's not cold, he's not cold. When I was a little boy, I wasn't cold. You know, my mom would always hassle me to put on a jacket, right? And just like, hey, like, maybe he's going to be cold one day and he'll learn he needs a jacket, or maybe he doesn't need the jacket. Like, just, I can back off, because ultimately he's going to need to make those judgments for himself. And whether an individual is hot or cold is a fairly easy judgment for any human to make. So maybe I don't need to waste my own energy on it, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, so energy conservation, right? And, like, stress conservation, like, is this really worth it? And how much work do I really need to be doing? Whether it's actual earning money work or working to shape and mold my child. I think trying to be discerning about that is really important, so that you still have time for yourself and you have sanity for yourself. I guess to wrap up, like you're saying, you know, how do you maintain your body and physical health? That's just a question of making sure you have time somewhere, either blocked out if you need it, or, you know, being very creative about squeezing in time to take care of your body. So I've worked with some moms who had like either newborns or like fairly new babies. If you have a newborn, just relax. Try not to do too much. You know, do what you can, but, like, if you have a crying, pooping, peeing baby, you're probably not going to get a lot of workouts in. But if you can squeeze things in here and there while babies are napping, that's fantastic, right? You can do quick workouts. I think having a kid and wanting to surf and doing all these things has made me really narrow down my own workouts, so that I have, you know, a couple exercises. I know I'm just going to do these. Maybe I get one set in and I only do one round of these exercises and that's it. Or maybe I get two rounds in and maybe I have some extras I can throw in there. But it doesn't take that long. If you have in mind that you have three exercises you're going to do, or even just two exercises that you're going to do, you don't need more than like 5 to 10 minutes to just kind of do it. Like a upper body exercise, lower body exercise, baby's crying. Okay. Well, at least I did something. And as your child becomes more independent and capable, then you have larger slots of time. So I think the whole exploration process with your body, if you can start identifying things that help you a lot, you can make those your priority. Those areas that you want to improve, for me, it's been upper body strength and lower body flexibility for certain surfing positions, and lower body strength. So I have those in my mind. And when I find, like, I'm at the playground with my son, he's distracted and playing with somebody else, I can do two sets of squats or some push-ups or work on my pop-ups or whatever. I might look a little bit weird as the parent who's, like, doing random exercise, but I know physically the payoff is way, way worth it.
Awesome. Yeah. I heard a lot about, sort of in my language, not your language, because my language is a bit extreme prioritization. And there's a really good book that I can recommend whoever's listening to this, which is The One Thing, which is one of my favorite books of all time. It helps you focus on what's important in life. Like, what I heard and what you were saying is helping parents focus on what really matters in my life and finding ways to focus on that more and more and more and not waste time on things that don't matter. So that's great. Thank you. And you also touched on one of my next questions, which is how do you, you know, we've been talking a lot about physical practice. How do you keep your body healthy? But that goes hand in hand with the mind. You can't possibly just try to have your gym practices, your physical practices, and not worry about the health of your brain, your mental space. So you already talked about that a little bit, but I wonder if you have any other tips about how to stay sane, not just as a parent, but just as someone who's trying to live a healthy, happy life, that could be related to managing emails. It could be related to screens is something that a lot of people worry about. Just anything that has personally helped you with your mental space. If you have a story that comes to mind, great. Just anything that helps you keep your brain happy.
Awesome question. There are a couple things. So one thing is getting enough sleep. So if I don't sleep enough, my brain will go into like these predictable and not helpful, well-worn ruts. I will become cranky, aggressive. I'll start getting paranoid. I'll just dislike everybody. So getting enough sleep is very important. And part of that is related to screen time, which is what you're alluding to there. So screen time management, internet management are a work in progress for me. They're a constant thing that I've been dancing with. So I've grown up with computers. I feel very comfortable and at home on computers and on the internet. There is a never-ending stream of stuff for me to research and look up and compare, like learn, whatever. And in the last, I'd say it's over the last 5 years or so, I've really gotten serious about managing this because I've seen it as a real, real problem for mental health. Obviously not the only one. There are plenty of researchers now who are talking about this, health people talking about how detrimental our constant screen time is. When I was living in San Diego, I remember I used to check my email on my phone right when I woke up and also right before bed because my phone was with me when I went to bed. Like it came with me into the bedroom. Last thing I did was check my email. First thing I did was check my email. And I don't remember why I became suddenly aware of what was going on. But one morning I reached over and I checked my email with this constant expectation of something horrible being in my email, even though I don't think I've really ever had anything horrible hit my email, but I'm always expecting this horrible something to arrive. And I remember I went to check and I just realized I was like hot. My body temperature had shot up like moist and wet. I don't know. It must've been like a hot San Diego summer day or something. And I just was like, oh, this just made it worse. And I realized I should not have this as my waking habit. Like I shouldn't be doing this. This is not good for me. And so I started keeping the phone outside of the bedroom so it could no longer be part of my bedtime routine. It is such an easy, fast win to just stop sleeping with your phone, keep it in the kitchen or lock it away in a drawer at night and just stop looking at it before bed. The improvement in sleep quality is huge. The physical improvement also is huge because, you know, if the last thing you do before going to bed is this, you're training, you've got that RPP thing going, right? You're repeatedly practicing this position, your neck and shoulders, whatever, you're tense, your jaw's all tense, your brain is going nuts while you're scrolling through everything. If you take that one thing out of the equation, you improve your mental and physical health immediately. I mean, it's crazy how big a difference it makes. So if you're going to do anything from this podcast, I would say do that thing, right? Because if you're still checking your phone and email before going to bed, then that's your easiest win right there.
So. Yeah. I actually, I don't keep the phone out of the bedroom at night, but during the day, I try to keep the phone in a drawer as much as I can. So it's physically like inside of something, because I've tried, using, you know, the different apps on the phone and the different things that you can set. And it's just so easy to just sit or to just hit the button that says 15 more minutes, 15 more minutes. And so I have started just putting it in a closet, putting it in a drawer and making that a habit. Like I'll actually create a 30-day challenge for myself where my focus for that 30 days is leave that phone in the drawer as much as possible. Obviously, some people who need to be more in contact with their phone for legitimate personal and business reasons won't be able to do that. But I would assert that everyone can do that to some degree where they keep it either away from their bed at night or in a drawer or put away somewhere, physically put away during some parts of the day, maybe just in the morning, just so you can get in your meditation or your movement or whatever you do in the morning. And then for the rest of the day, you have it, but just look for those times where you can put it away. That would be my two cents.
Yeah. So one thing you said is, you know, at night, I guess you probably use the phone as an alarm, it sounds like.
Yeah.
So I think one thing that can be helpful, because I've had some clients bring that up in the past, and something that I had to do, the first thing I had to do when I was trying to institute this was like, wait, how am I going to know what time it is? So I just bought an alarm clock, which was like, it actually like took brain power to think, like, I was like, how do people tell the time without their phone? So I had to buy a $15 alarm clock and stick it by the bed. It's like, wow, I feel like I'm Amish or something, right? So for those who are thinking like, oh, there's no way I can not have the phone by the bed, just get a clock or have a watch or something. Not an Apple Watch, get a old school clock, old school watch, and have it by the bed. That's a simple way to do it. Another thing that I just wanted to say is, it makes me feel so much more like a human to hear that you also are having to do those physical things with your phone in the day. Because I imagine somebody like you who, you know, you meditate a lot, you're training your mind, you're doing all these things to have good focus and control. Even for you, it's still a challenge if it's not physically away. And that just makes me feel better, you know, that I'm just like a
good
that normal.
That I can help with that. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think there's always the inner game and the outer game. There's always, yes, you should train your mind with meditation to more and more be the master of your own mind. But also you can change the outer environment that you're in to facilitate and make it easier for you to do the right thing.
Right.
I try to do both of them. I don't rely purely on mental power and surround myself with junk food and phones and, you know, technology and all kinds of things. I try to work on the inner strength and also the outer world as well.
It's kind of a funny thing, right? It's like if you have a piece of cake next to you all day, it's a lot harder to not eat that cake, right? So no cake, no problem, right?
No cake, no problem. I'm curious. I think we touched on a lot. We touched on healthy habits for your body, healthy habits for your mind, how to stay fit and healthy and happy as a busy parent, someone running a business and having a family life and trying to take care of their body. Is there anything that we didn't touch on that you think is important for the people who might be listening to us?
No, you know, I think that idea of extreme prioritization is probably the biggest, and whatever it takes you to get there is really important. For me, that's just been, really recognizing that time is limited, and having a kid has helped with that. Almost drowning while surfing a couple of years ago really helped me look at mortality more honestly and clearly, and even seeing my parents' age is making me see mortality as a real life thing. And that's, you know, keeping that in mind can be really helpful for understanding how you want to prioritize time. It really helps me prioritize my time.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That deathbed sort of reflection is something I think about too a lot. It's not like I'm sitting here all day thinking about death, but just from time to time, it's kind of like, if I literally was on my deathbed, what would I, in looking back at my life, what would I have been so happy that I was doing day after day, week after week? And what things would I have not been very happy that I was doing? And almost always the answer is taking care of my body, taking care of my mind, my emotions, being with the important people in my life. Those are the things that I'm going to be thankful that I was doing regularly. And the things like going down the 13th rabbit hole on Google searching some interesting topic in the moment or scrolling. I'm not going to be happy that I was spending a lot of time doing that. And so I reflect on that a lot. I'm glad you brought that up. Well, I just want to acknowledge you for being, I've known you for a long time and I've seen your journey and your trajectory from being that kind of young, ambitious, you're still young, but being younger, ambitious, workaholic, often getting to the point of overstressing yourself and falling out of balance when you were in your 20s.
Oh, like on a maybe daily basis.
But I've seen your evolution, and that's what I'm acknowledging you for, is that even though you're not perfect, none of us are, we still get trapped in the phones and we still don't have, you know, you're not working out as hardcore 7 days a week, but I've seen you progress. I've seen you evolve. And what's cool is you're sharing your entire journey on YouTube and on your website and with your programs and products about tips and tricks that people can use to have it all, to live a balanced life while you're got a kid, while you have a business, while you have a wife, while you have a family life, taking care of your parents, all the things that you're doing that in a balanced way. I acknowledge you for that. And thank you for sharing on this podcast. Where can people learn more about you?
They can find me on my website at uprighthealth.com or on YouTube. Just look up Upright Health and you'll find, I think it's over 1,000 videos now on YouTube. Wow. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Nice.
Just Google the man. He's easy to find.
Yeah, Upright Health. That's it. You'll find me.
Cool. Matt, thanks so much for being on the podcast. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much. Take care.